offering up of the Son through the Father and the offering up of the Son himself. This is the movement of incarnation, of obedience, and of love. Therefore, it is not sufficient to designate Jesus as the stand-in or the deputy of the absent God. For precisely in such a capacity, he is already the incarnation of the coming God. Eschatological Christology goes astray if it does not become in the counter-movement a Christological eschatology. As the anticipation of the future of God, Christ becomes the ground of hope. As a preparatory Messiah of God, he reveals already God as the Father. So the anticipation of the coming God through Jesus and in Jesus is comprehended in the symbol of the resurrection of Jesus ahead of us. And the incarnation of the coming God in Jesus is manifest in the meaning of his cross. The Christ who was raised ahead of us mortals as the first fruits into the new life or the future is the same as the Christ who for us died the death of God-forsakenness. So it does not suffice to speak only of a prolepsis of the eschaton or the future in Christ. That is no help to those who are living within the agony of history. Within the agony of history, the message of resurrection and hope always reaches us as men closed to the future and unfree in the form of the message of the Christ who was for us, offered up and crucified. Or theoretically expressed, just as the resurrection alone manifests the meaning of the cross of Christ, so his cross alone makes the resurrection meaningful for us. Resurrection faith can only be grasped as faith in the crucified one. And hope with finality in itself can be hope against hope only if it is born out of the redeeming and freeing efficacy of the cross of Christ. For in the one crucified for us, hope in freedom is not only portrayed paradigmatically before our eyes, but is actually mediated to us. Hope is not born out of enthusiasm, but out of love that liberates from old bonds and opens up new opportunities. Therefore, in a world of death and forsakenness, the coming glory of God or the future shines forth at first in the face of the crucified Christ. Now let's draw some consequences. With the acquired messianic concepts of the dialectic of anticipation and incarnation, of resurrection and cross, we can consider the mission of the community of Christ, of the messianic congregation, in a corresponding way. Its word of the gospel is the anticipation of the final manifestation of God in all areas of the world, and can be expressed only in performatory language. It thus bears in itself the character of promise. The gospel proclaims nothing other than that Jesus, the Christ of God, was for us killed and resurrected. But that it does this already is the beginning of the future of Christ and of the ultimate liberation of the world. That such an ultimate liberation is already possible in history through the faith-creating word is nothing less than a messianic possibility. Correspondingly, the Christ event is represented, and rebirth and reconciliation are made present in baptism and the Lord's Supper. But that this is already happening is a possibility of the messianic time. The memory that makes Christ present is as such a anticipation of the future in hope. Because faith relates to the reality of God only through word and spirit and not yet through sight in the visible new creation, it is as faith, hope, namely the trusting beginning of the vision of God face to face. Accordingly, the obedience of the faithful in the body and in everyday life is a discipleship of Christ, and this is its criterion. And as such is already the anticipation of the resurrection of the body under the conditions of history, and an anticipation of the kingdom of freedom in the possibilities of the present. And as a brotherhood of the Christ of God, the Christian community is the avant-garde of a world freed from godlessness and inhumanity. And conversely, only where it is something like that, it is the messianic community of Christ. Only when it employs its own freedom in order to make its own the groaning of the whole enslaved creation is a Christian community, the sacrament of God's hope for the world. Now with this we come to the furthermost horizon of eschatology, namely an eschatology of being. Hope in the coming God leads not only to a messianic interpretation of the biblical and the Christian history, but must, if it is to be relevant, lead also to a messianic understanding of reality itself. A few intimations must suffice here. If we combine the idea of God with the idea of the future assumes a creative character for time and for the whole of historical being. Out of the future springs new possibilities, and out of these possibilities a new reality is created. In this sense, history is a product of a creative process. To express it in another way, the future realizes itself in history and as history, and yet always rebounds from its own realizations in history and becomes again a not yet realized future of the whole of being. All historical realizations of the future of being are ambiguous because, as well as being realizations, they also are hindrances of this future being. These possibilities are realized and at the same time also forfeited. Every historical reality has in itself something like the intention to be an enduring eternal presence. And reality, for everything which is wishes to remain and not to vanish. Thus we find everywhere in reality the tendency towards stabilization in a cosmic order against chaos. But no historical reality is already that prevailing eschatological reality. Therefore, the prevailing reality transcends all historical realities and renders them once again historical realities. In the light of a messianic future, we can thus conceive reality as historical tension between particularity and universality, between ambivalence and clarity, or between incarnation and transcendence. Reality is not a permanent cosmos and does not consist in repeatable orders, neither it is a chaos. It is the historical process or the experimental field of the coming fullness of being. We can therefore rediscover in the intentions and tendencies of all beings in history something of what is called in traditional language spirit. It is the agony, the motivating force, the tension of matter. It is the yearning, the unfulfillment, anxiety and suffering in matter itself. The unrest which man experiences in his heart wherever hope affects him is an unrest which he rediscovers in his body and in all beings. Everything which exists is burdened with transitoriness, but in hope because it wants to be free. The formation of a eschatological or messianic understanding of being will necessitate, therefore, first, an understanding of nature in terms of history, and second, an understanding of spirit materially and matter spiritually. The views of Théard de Chardin and Ernst Bloch point in this direction. To man's restless heart, there corresponds a restless world. So this is now my last point, creative eschatology or political theology. How does the messianic mission of man for the future realize itself? For messianic hope, the future, the kingdom or the city of God, do not simply lie in readiness in the future, so that one could only wait for this future and relate to it in conceptualizations. Even though the future of God is God's future, it is also true that one must seek it in order to find it. Christian hope anticipates the future in the spirit of Christ and realizes it under the conditions of history. In that this future is anticipated in hope and obedience, it is itself conceived as in the process of coming. We are construction workers and not only interpreters of the future, whose power in hope as well as in fulfillment is God. This means that Christian hope is a creative and militant hope in history. The horizon of eschatological expectation produces here a horizon of ethical intentions, which in turn gives meaning to the concrete historical initiatives. If one hopes for the sake of Christ in the future of God and the ultimate liberation of the world, he cannot passively wait for this future, or like the apocalyptic believers, withdraw from the world. Rather, he must seek this future, striving for it, and already here be in correspondence to it in the active transformation of life and of the conditions of life, therefore to realize them already here according to the measure of possibilities. Because this future is a future of one God, it is a unique and unifying future. And because it should bring eschatological liberation, it is the salvation of the whole enslaved creation. The messianic future for which Christianity arouses hope is therefore not a special future for the church or for the soul alone. It is an all-encompassing future. And as all-encompassing future, its power of hope is able to mediate faith to earthly needs and lead into the real life. Now, after the humanistic ethic of hope in the 19th century and its impotence in the catastrophes of the 20th century, many in Europe and America developed an ethic of faith that was justified, but it appears to me that today we should now develop a new ethic of the hope of faith. Together with Johann Baptist Metz, I call it political theology in order to make clear that ethics is not an appendix to dogmatics and also not only a consequence of faith, but that faith itself has a messianic context in which it becomes meaningful, and that theology itself stands in a political dimension in which it becomes relevant. For us, the field of politics designates the extensive field of constructive as well as destructive possibilities of the appropriation and utilization of nature's powers as well as of human relationships by human society. Nature and human society comes together in the process of civilization. In it, there can no longer be a distinction between cosmology and anthropology. For man and nature, politics is becoming a common destiny. We take up the ancient concept of theologia politica or theologia civilis to point out the fundamental situation in which the God question is raised and in which Christian God talk must become relevant today. If it is correct that the old cosmological theodicy question about evil and misfortune has become today a more and more political question, then the Christian faith in the creative righteousness of God and the liberation of the world out of its self-inflicted misery must become practically responsible exactly at this point. It is, on the other side, well known that the retreat of theology and faith out of politics into the private dimension has conceded the field of politics to godless and inhuman powers. That faith, which no longer seeks God and his righteousness in the world and in transforming the world, but only in the soul, has allied itself with a practical atheism which seeks the world without God and righteousness, and with it has contracted an alliance of death, of the death of God in the world. On the other hand, the theology of the believing I, or of the esoteric I-thou relationship, has reached its limitations because it is not in the position to come to grips with social and political institutions and organizations. But as soon as one emerges from the problem of realizing the I and of the question of identity, he can then see his I in connection with larger spheres. The identity question of man finds no solution without the recognition of the call of man to concrete engagement and to active self-renunciation for the sake of a greater cause. I think man finds his inner certainty only when he finds certainty about the task for which he exists and in which he can exert himself. So he who forgets himself in devotion to the mission of Christ for the liberation of the world will find himself. The New Testament community spoke of such calls in connection with charisms and virtues. They realized these in their time in the missionary proclamation of freedom, in the messianic community of free men, and in the new obedience for the sake of the liberation out of bodily misery. If in our time politics is increasingly becoming the destiny and more threateningly the fate of man, it is necessary to develop a political theology of Christian virtues. So political theology unites the old cosmological theology and the new theology of existence in the eschatological understanding of history with the messianic tasks of man in history. Yet exactly at this juncture, we must consider that it is unreal or unrealistic to anticipate and work for the future if this future is not open for us. The future in which we hope is never identical with the successes of our activity, for our actions are as ambivalent as we ourselves, insofar as we are historical beings. So the future and hope in the future must have a certainty that the future comes towards us in order that our activity be not in vain. And that is, revolutions and political actions which must bring a better future with force are aimed at reconciliation of their attained reality with a hoped for future. And for that reason, messianism, of which we spoke politically in reference to the liberation of the world from its misery, needs permanent reconciliation through the freedom of Christ. Hope, which mobilizes the renewal of life, needs faith in order to find certainty. The liberating future enters into the possibilities and impossibilities of our history in a twofold way, as exhortation of redemption from the guilt-laden coercion which binds us to the past and hurls us into transiency, and as demand for the renewal of life. So the surplus value of the future over history manifests itself in hope's permanent surplus incentive and with equal importance in the redemption of fixed ideas. Without faith, hope cannot love. And without hope, faith cannot live and dispose itself in the world. Well, allow me to sum up what I wanted to say in the last section about the necessity of a political theology and the necessity of a theology of reconciliation in politics with a few lines of Bert Brecht. We who wished to prepare the soil for kindness could not be kind ourselves. But you, when at last it will come to pass that man is a helper to man, remember us with forbearance.